Hello, I'm Emma Rutland, the Duchess of Rutland, and this is my podcast, Duchess, a podcast in which I explore the most historic homes in the UK and meet the inspiring women who lead them. As a daughter of a Welsh farmer, I grew up far away from the glamour and wealth of aristocracy. But my life changed forever when I fell in love and married my husband, the 11th Duke of Rutland. Suddenly, one of Britain's most historic buildings was not only my home, but under my care. I wanted to learn more about this world and hear the stories of the other women, like me, the custodians of these great homes. So, in this podcast, I will travel to breathtaking homes, learn incredible history, and meet the inspiring women who lead these estates today. So please do join me on my very special journey. This is Duchess, the podcast. Before we get started, I'd like to say thank you to our wonderful sponsor, Circle DNA. For those who may not know, Circle DNA is a company that specializes in finding smarter, easier, and more effective solutions to your health by testing your DNA. Listeners, you know how much I love to learn about family history and lineage, and I found my Circle Premium results absolutely fascinating. I learned so much about myself, from my diet and nutrition, skin and fitness, to common diseases and cancer risks. When my daughter Violet and I did the test, we even learned she had a sensitivity to spicy food. That explains why she has been kicking up a fuss at the dinner table for all these years. If you sign up to Circle DNA, you will receive your DNA testing kit in the post. Use the easy-to-follow testing instructions to self-swab at home. Send your completed swab to their laboratory for analysis, and within 3 weeks, you'll receive your results and personalized recommendations. You will also have the opportunity to book 2 complimentary consultations, one with a health coach and one with a genetic counselor. To learn more about Circle DNA, visit their website and use the code THEDUCHESS40 for 40% off their DNA test kits. On today's very special episode of Duchess, we are travelling outside Great Britain and to our closest neighbours, Ireland. Perched along the picturesque coast of County Limerick rests one of Ireland's most historic buildings, Glynn Castle. Architecturally, Glynn is a jewel in the Emerald Crown of Ayr, boasting a handsome neoclassical style with battlements on the roof and stoic grey facade. The home is surrounded by a wild and ancient woodland. For 700 years, the castle was seat to the Knights of Glynn and home to the prestigious Fitzgerald clan, who, like the estate itself, in one of Ireland's most historic and important families, both politically and culturally. Today, Glynn is under the custodianship of the famed Irish landscape designer Catherine Fitzgerald, daughter of the 29th and last Knight of Glynn. Catherine has grown up on the estate where she lives with her husband, actor Dominic West. In this episode, Catherine regales some of the wonderful and amusing legends associated with her family. We catch a glimpse of the ghosts of Glynn, and Catherine opens up about the unexpected nature of her custodianship. So welcome, Catherine, and thank you so much for joining me on this podcast. So, Catherine,
You are Irish, is that right? Your lineage is Irish. It goes back how many generations?
Fitzgeralds were Normans who came over with William the Conqueror and made their way west to Wales and came to Ireland with Strongbow in the 1200s. So the Fitzgeralds settled in several parts of Ireland, but initially Munster, where Glynn is, and their first castle was at Shannon, which is near Glynn, County Limerick. And so the family have been settled on these lands since the 1230s. So it's a long time.
And how many generations could that be?
Well, my father was the 29th and last knight of Glynn. It's murky when the actual title came into being or what exactly it was. It's a very romantic, unusual title. There were only ever three knights. They were not connected to the English nobility. They were created by, no one knows really how or when, but the Earl of Desmond was their kinsman and their leader, and they followed him in battle and were his supporters. And it is thought that sometime in the 1400s that his three either brothers, bastard brothers, or close relations, he created them. The Knight of Glynn was one, the Black Knight, the White Knight, and the Knight of Kerry, the Green Knight. And there were just three, and the Knight of Kerry still exists. The White Knight has died out. And now, sadly, the 29th Knight, who is my father with no son, he was the last one. So since 1400, 29 generations ended, and now I would be the 30th Knight if I was a boy, but it doesn't extend to female descendants.
So there's some very captivating legends associated with the Knights of Glynn. Could you talk about some of the notable knights and some of your favourite legends attached to them?
I suppose the great event which Glynn environs remember in history is this terrible siege of Glynn. And the colourful story goes that Edmund, Knight of Glynn, was fighting on the top of his castle. His son was captured by Sir George Carew's troops and tied to the mouth of the cannon. And they said, if you don't surrender, we'll blow him to smithereens. And the knight shouted out in Gaelic that he was virile, his wife was fertile, and there were many more where he came from, which does sound a bit brutal in the light of today's views. But his son was captured. They didn't actually blow him up, but the castle did fall. But I love that story, which shows the spirit of the Fitzgeralds. And then there were many other colourful knights. There was the knight who built the house, John Bateman Fitzgerald. His wonderful portrait hangs over the fireplace. He married an heiress from Ford Abbey in England. The family are actually living in a thatched house after the fall of Glynn Castle, which is part of the wing now. But he, in this defiant gesture of, I'm the Knight of Glynn, I must have a suitable residence, built the house as we know it now. So it was really that night that I'm grateful for the creation of this house. It was a real outpost. It was miles from anywhere. So it was an extraordinary sort of feat, really. And then his son was another interesting character called the Knight of the Women. And he was well known to have all these mistresses, and he was really disapproved of by the parish priest and denounced from the pulpit, but that didn't stop him. The house was actually a Georgian house, and he castellated it. He thought, I'm a Knight of Glynn, and he was very proud of his Gaelic Hiberno-Norman heritage. He wanted to live in a castle, but it was a toy fort castle. It just had icing sugar crenellations, which are absolutely fabulous, but it's an 1820s castle. But it was his eye and his sense of theatre which really cloaked the domain in these wonderful little toy lodges. And they're absolutely full of charm, with arrow loops, Gothic windows, turrets. You know, as children, we were fascinated with them. We could get up into the turrets and shout at people on the road. They're real flights of fancy. And he was supposed to keep a mistress in every one, hence the Knight of the Women.
So the 1820s building is the one that you're looking after to this day?
Absolutely.
You haven't had any big changes made?
No, I mean, that's really one of the wonderful things. So many houses that get sold and passed from different owners, you know, they have a lot of different eras, but Glynn was so lucky to stay in one family, so that it's all a set piece, really, and it's never had any interventions which feel wrong. And my parents were very careful when turning into a guest house not to make it feel any different than it was. They really preserved it as much as they really could. So it does feel all of a piece, and you can see everything. It's all there.
It sounds rather like Beaver, in the sense that Beaver was built at the same time and our architect was James Wyatt. But what I always loved was how Violet, who is the 8th Duchess, I'm the 11th, always wrote in her diaries that if the family had been rich, they would have done amazing things to Beaver. But because they had no money, it often kept this heritage, as it should be really, intact.
Absolutely the same thing. The Fitzgeralds throughout the 18th century and the 19th century, I mean, it was the debtor's prison. They were spendthrift. They were rackety. They had horses and gambling. There was absolutely no money to Victorianize or anything else, which we're all pretty grateful to. So the 18th century interiors just remain pretty much.
Absolutely. So could you talk to me about some of the women that have lived at Glen Castle and illuminate some of the contributions that they've made in this wonderful home?
There's this rather inspiring early wife of an 18th century knight around 1710, Mary. She was called Mary Fitzgerald. She made sure nobody went hungry. She rustled cattle from the Kerry border if her people were starving. She was called the female chieftain. Her portrait is in the house, and I like to imagine her and her spirit. She looks like a spirited lady with long brown hair, and she sort of looks like she's smiling knowingly. She's an early figure that I can put some characteristics to. But it was later on in the 19th century when Rachel Wyndham Quin of Adair married my great-grandfather, and she was a keen painter, artist, and plantswoman. And it's really her plantings which started the garden as we know it. And then my grandmother, who I knew very well and stayed with a lot in Canada, she carried it on, and I was able to learn quite a bit from her. She was an early ecologist. She was a painter as well. So I had these two rather inspirational women in the background to start off with. And then, of course, my own mother, who was English. She came to Glen in the 1970s, not knowing anything, and incredibly sensitive and clever. She saw what was needed, and she read and learned and took advice. And it was she who restored the gardens after a long period without anyone living there. So yes, the garden had gone back to just being overgrown, and all was lost there. And my mother really came and just realized that it was the heart of the place, and she needed to get it going. So that was her mission, and she has really done a fantastic job. She found the old pathways, restored the greenhouse, planted new espaliered fruit trees, dividing up the plots, put in flower borders, and she began to grow a huge array of vegetables, a lot of which were not available in Ireland in the 70s. Simultaneously, they began to take paying guests, and that evolved into a hotel, and she would be able to feed all these visitors from the garden. It was really her inspiration to grow things that were not available, asparagus, artichoke, sea kale, all these things that our guests were able to enjoy, all the herbs, incredible fruit, and that was her doing. And we still have that today. So I'm carrying that on in the main garden probably the most.
But you have never been interested in a neat and tidy garden, is that correct?
Yes, my real inspiration to become a gardener and study plants and so on was partly Glen, but I went to the sea-bound garden in County Kerry called Doreen. And it was there that I saw this subtropical paradise of tree ferns and huge tree rhododendrons and lichen and moss and completely wild. It looked like a wild jungle encompassing rare species of ferns. And it was an extraordinary revelation. The sea was coming in on three sides, and it felt like no frost had ever been there, or that no person had ever been there, except little winding paths and rocks. So it was really Doreen and another garden nearby, Rostowen, that excited me so much to become a gardener. So it wasn't so much the sort of formality that we think of some gardens, especially some English gardens. It was more that sort of West of Ireland Gulf Stream garden which got me going, which is certainly not the neat and tidy look.
Everywhere I go to, I have to ask this rather extraordinary question, and it would be remiss of me not to come to Ireland, where one imagines all the myths of our Celtic history surrounding. Have you ever seen or heard or know of any spirits that are hanging around Glen to this day?
Well, it doesn't feel very haunted, funnily, but my father always told this story. He saw this ghostly rope hanging, and he was really amazed by this, and it wasn't real, but he saw it hanging down from the ceiling in the back hall where the flying staircase is. And then he was amazed to learn later from Paddy Healy, who was part of the family, the Healys, who built the house and maintained it, that when the back hall was being redecorated, two were workmen fell, and one died and one was really severely injured. He told my father when it had happened, and when my father looked it up, it was when there were workmen working there. So this strange hanging rope must have been a ghostly rope to do with that. That was odd. So there's a few oddities. There's been a sighting of a woman walking in the garden that Una Burke, who also had worked in the house, she saw this strange lady from time to time, but I don't know what that's about. So there are glimpses of ghosts.
You've never seen anything.
I haven't seen anything, and I've never felt a sort of bad feeling. So it's always felt quite a friendly place, yes.
So talking to you today, for our listeners, Catherine, will you just tell us about the room that we're in?
Yes, the family had come through the ups and downs of the long 17th century and the rackety early 18th century. By the 1780s, John Bateman Fitzgerald had married an heiress he'd met at Bath. And these were good times. This was a sort of high point. Architecture in Ireland was enjoying a golden period. This is when most of Georgian Dublin was built. And Glyn is very much part of that high point. We had independent parliament in Dublin, and there was an absolute surge of activity with building and decoration and the arts and all kinds of improvements to farms and estates. So it was a moment of optimism, you could say. And I think the knight who built the house was very much part of that. He'd married a wife with a good dowry, and they wanted to have a good time, and they decided to build this neoclassical mansion. The hall is the sort of center of the whole thing. You come in the front door. The Shannon estuary is stretching away on the other side, and they chose to put these two rather marvellous Corinthian columns, mostly seen at the back of halls in Irish houses. They put them at the front, and then this very beautiful classical room for entertaining. The house was really built for entertaining. The family were famous for hospitality throughout all the 16th, 17th, 18th centuries, and I think they were carrying on the tradition. They wanted to have parties and have people to come, and the room was generous and felt incredibly welcoming, with a wonderful fireplace and a screen which led through to a back hall. And then we've got on the walls some interesting portraits. Here to my left is John Fitzgerald, who went on the grand tour. It's a very dramatic picture. His servant is passing him a summons to a duel and looking at him in a wily way. And what happened was the knight accepted the summons to the duel, and as they were about to fight, the servant shouted out in Gaelic, "To stick him where they stick the pigs, knight," which means in the throat, because the opponent was wearing chainmail. He was a cheat. He was wearing chainmail underneath. So he saved his master's life. And the picture is very lively, and you can see the movements of the eyes and the hands. It's a rather wonderful full-length portrait, almost from floor to ceiling. And the other wonderful thing about the room is the plasterwork, which has its original colours, the Adam-style colours of light green and pink, now rather smoky from the fire, showing the coat of arms, which is the wild boar. Shannad Abu was the Norman Irish war cry of the early Fitzgerald. Shannad forever. That's what they would shout in battle, their battle cry. And you can see the wild boar. Then you can see mermaids, bosomy harp, Irish harp. It's one of the earliest depictions of the shamrock coming out of these little shields or peltai, which run along the cornice. So there's all sorts of classical allusions to the scene, and it's a beautiful Adam-style design.
We can learn a lot about a person from walking into their home, their manners, their sense of taste, their willingness to share. What is so extraordinary is, despite the sea between Catherine and I as we speak, I'm getting such a sense of who she is and her character, her sophistication, her insight, and her openness. This is a quick reminder that you're listening to Duchess, hosted by me, Emma Rutland, and this is a podcast produced by One Fine Play in collaboration with Beaver Castle. Coming up on the podcast, Catherine walks me through the gardens of Glyn to learn more about her fabulous work at the castle, and we discuss how the pandemic has brought a reconnection to heritage. But first, I was interested to learn about Catherine's personal transition from being a successful landscape designer to becoming a custodian.
So did your father and mother spend most of their time at Glyn?
Yes, they did, absolutely. They came back to live there in the early 70s and they brought us up there. We worked in the V&A in London and then I was born in London and we came back to live there when I was four. And they really got the place going, which for my father, whose passion it was. He was an architectural historian. He had been brought up there and was inspired by the architecture of the place to go on to study and learn. And he wrote many books about Irish art and architecture and furniture in particular. And so it was his passion and he really lived and worked to preserve it. And in the end, he thought he would be able to leave it to a preservation society called the Heritage Trust. But that didn't actually happen because the Heritage Trust was unable to take it on, really. It didn't quite come to that. So I suppose I never really envisaged what was going to happen. I led a different life in my 20s and 30s. And then when later on, it was a sort of decision to try to fight to keep it going as a place which I felt told a tale and had remained remarkably intact and really was a gem which encapsulated so much history in the fabric of the place, in the landscape, in the building, in the garden, in the story of the different characters who had lived there.
So let's just for a moment, if we may, Catherine, go back to your journey and your life before you had this burning ambition to take on this great part of Irish history. So you didn't grow up imagining you were going to take on Glyn. So what was the journey of your career?
No, I didn't. I suppose my father was so all powerful, really, as a figure. I didn't really envisage him ever dying. And I don't know, it seems short-sighted, I know. But he never mentioned it and didn't talk about it or what would happen. So there wasn't this grand plan, which seems, I know, strange. There were three daughters at that time. You know, if he'd had a son who would have been the 30th Knight of Glyn, it would all have been relatively simple. But because there wasn't, he probably wasn't sure what plans to make or who to leave it to or who would be responsible. He left that to be resolved after he died. So I had a different life. My parents were busy running Glyn and I trained to be a landscape designer and have worked doing that for the last 20 years. And then that did join up with Glyn in that the garden at Glyn has an interesting history, very much depended always on the women of the house, which I related to. I felt I knew all those characters who had put so much into the garden. And so my passions for both gardening, design, plants came together with my idea to try to keep the house going. I wanted to carry on with the garden because I'd invested so much planting in it. I really felt it was a worthwhile project to keep going with it. So yes, the gardening kind of encompasses both lives, Glyn and my professional life.
Well, that's wonderful. And how lucky Glyn is to have a landscape gardener at its helm. Can you just tell me for a moment, did you ever feel growing up, one of three daughters, a sense of sadness that you weren't a boy?
No, I didn't, because he really lived in the moment and there was never a sort of sense of that, no. And he always said he felt that he was so unsuited to sons. He didn't play sports. He was an arty fellow. People would say in Limerick, he's sort of not hunting, shooting, fishing. He wasn't at all football or anything else. He thought he would have been a dreadful father to a son. So he always said he was delighted to have three daughters. But I suppose, you know, it would have been simpler for him at that time to have sort of had this sort of son that would have been the knight and could have been the person to carry it on automatically. But no, he never made us feel like that.
That's wonderful that he didn't. How would you describe your role at Glyn Castle today?
People often say caretaker, but I'm not really looking to control the future. I'm just thinking about day to day, really, and how I can take care of it. And when a problem presents itself, I'm dealing with it. So it's always this juggling act of how do I keep it so members of the public could enjoy it more, but not mean that I'm cutting off the very important supply of funds that must come from the private entertaining angle. I want to have as many different streams of activities going on. So like the War Garden, Woodland Walks and Cap could be a little coffee shop. Can that exist independently? And then I have the other section doing its own thing. These estates need several streams. You can't just rely on one, which I'm learning.
Do you see yourself as a custodian or a defender of Glyn Castle?
Well, I'd like to say defender because of the warlike past of my ancestors. In 1600s, the George Carew sailed up the Shannon. He was Elizabethan general. And he laid waste to Old Glyn Castle. But the Fitzgeralds, they were down and out for a bit, but they kept coming back. So I'd like to say defender, but I feel that actually custodian custodian probably is the right word, because there are so many people who are keen to see these places not only survive but flourish. Because I think people are more and more drawn to the art, to the garden, to plants, to landscape, especially during COVID, when you see all the, how many people have felt the need to be in nature, to be walking, to get out into the countryside. And these places are the lungs. So many of them provide all of that. So I think that people are really more than ever appreciative of heritage and probably don't even realize how hard people are working to keep them going. But I think they are really appreciated. I'm sure you feel that.
Well, do you feel that COVID actually has really helped people to reconnect with their local big house on the hill?
I do. I mean, I know it from talking to other places like Tallynally, County Westmeath. You know, the amount of people who use the walks and the garden there has rocketed during COVID. I think people were so keen to get out, and these places are often on the doorstep, had not maybe been made use of fully. But now I think after this, I feel the numbers are not dropping. I think people are carrying on with their routine of walking and loving it. We have one walk called the Knight's Walk on the top, which goes over the farm, and you can see down the Shannon. It's a fantastic 5K walk. You know, people come from far and wide to do it, and that makes me very proud. This has worked so well, and I want to do more of that. And so much of my passion and belief in the nurture of nature and countryside to people's well-being is tied up with that.
What are your ambitions at Glyn Castle for the future?
Well, I suppose what I'm really trying to do with Glyn is to make it self-sustainable and self-supporting, with several different strands of lifeline going on, which complement each other and which work side by side in creating an estate which can go into the future, which is secure. The fabric of the building is preserved. The interiors are kept alive. I'm passionate about the use of the house for guests and for people in doing flowers and moving around furniture and pictures according to what we feel works, to keep it alive and living and not to ossify. I think sometimes old buildings that become too museum-like lose something fluid, leave that life pulse, which really makes people look twice. It's all about keeping it fresh, and the family's involvement is key, even if we're not there all the time. Gardens are the same. They ossify unless there's a sort of driving force or a prime mover, someone who's really pushing boundaries, trying new things. So, you know, I suppose where I come to a halt is I don't know what the next generation will want to do. So it's a difficult question in that sense. And I think it's the same for all private houses in private hands. We can't foretell the future. But if in my lifetime, while I can keep it going, I will do my best to share it with people, to keep the building in good order. But more than that, to keep it fresh, keep it developing, try to do new projects and draw new people and new projects to it. I don't know if there's anything else I can add to that. It's a sort of artistic endeavour as much as anything, as well as a sense of responsibility and, above all, I suppose, a sense of love for the beauty of the place in a world which is, you know, there is so much destruction and so much change. And so it's an appreciation of a precious place, and all I can do is try to preserve it and beautify it.
Oh, that's left a lump in my throat, Catherine. There are some 29 knights of Glyn looking at you, all raising their swords, saying, she's got to be made the first Madam of Glyn. So we'll raise our sword to you, if we may, and say, keep fighting your battles. And to those children that I'm quite sure that are growing up now with that love and cherishing and nurturing of this beautiful home and surroundings, what about their great-great-great-grandchildren? What advice or guidance or leg up would you give them if you were able to speak to them?
I suppose one bit of advice I would give is try to get away and do other things and experience things. And I might not have done my gardening if I hadn't gone wider out and become a professional and grown that love, which has actually brought me back to something there. So the idea that someone sort of tied to it from birth doesn't feel somehow you must let people be free to go and do things, and then if they want to come back and take it on, and it means that they perhaps can take it on in a more creative way.
I think that's brilliant advice. What a pleasure, Catherine, meeting you in your beautiful Irish countryside and hearing your fabulous story.
Thank you
and
so much.
And Ireland has you as a spear bearer of its Georgian houses throughout the Irish countryside. And Glencastle has a very, very powerful mistress to take it forward as its madam. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Emma. It was lovely talking to you.
Something so powerful that we've been trying to accomplish with this podcast, dear listeners, is to bring you a real sense of experiencing these magical places in the comfort of your own home. Experiencing a sense of heritage, even when you're not quite able to visit them. I hope we have accomplished this today, listeners, because speaking to Catherine has been a joy. We've taken a seat with the Knights of Glyn, we've walked the wild, beautiful gardens of Ireland, and we've been able to enjoy the conversation of such a wonderful ambassador for heritage. Thank you so much, Catherine, for joining me on this podcast today, and thank you all at home for listening. Next week, we have another series first, where I speak to Lady Northampton about the beautiful Compton Wynyates, the first home to be featured on the podcast that isn't open to the public. In the episode, I learn about the orphan child that became one of Henry VIII's closest friends. Lady Northampton explains why Compton Wynyates is such an architectural treasure of an estate, and I am introduced to the unpublished female poet that was admired by some of the greatest literary luminaries of the day. I'd also just like to thank once again our wonderful sponsor, Circle DNA, for supporting the podcast. If you want to learn more about the great work Circle DNA do and make a real investment into your health, visit their website and use the code THEDUCHESS40 for 40% off their DNA test kits. Now, listeners, once again we're back with our beloved listener inbox segment. This time we have Brian from Washington writing in. We've had so many fans from the States, and this message reads, "Your Grace, many congratulations on a splendid first episode of your new podcast. This is such a brilliant concept, a perfect moment, and the interview hit exactly the right balance of history, present-day circumstances, and the future goals for Headingham Castle. The conversation was also so full of warmth and was an ideal length. Thank you to your entire team for this great gift. I hope it will inspire similar projects elsewhere. Respectfully, Brian, Washington DC. Well, thank you, Brian. It's really important for us custodians to be constantly thinking about the future. And of course, life in heritage is one devoted to finding that balance between representing the past and considering the future. Thank you so much for writing in. Couple of quick notes before we go. Important ones. Make sure you subscribe to Duchess the podcast so you get automatically notified about new episodes wherever you listen to a podcast. I want to know about you and what you think of the show, so please be sure to send me your comments and tell me about your own lineage and the women who have inspired you in your life. Please write to me on duchess@duchessthepodcast.com. And if there are any stately homes in particular you'd like me to visit, do send your suggestions to me as soon as possible. I've started a newsletter that includes all this and more and comes straight to your inbox. It's really easy to sign up at duchessthepodcast.com. You've been listening to Duchess, the podcast, presented by me, Emma Rutland, the Duchess of Rutland, produced by One Fine Play in collaboration with Beaver Castle. From Beaver Castle, Lady Violet Manners is the executive producer. From One Fine Play, James Bishop is the executive producer. Kasra Ferruzia is the audio and visual engineer. Connor Foley is the editorial producer and researcher. Additional creative support from Selena Christofies and Theo Banner. Thanks for listening to Duchess, the podcast.